My name is John Erling. Today's date is October 26, 2011. Larry, would you state your full name, your date of birth, and your present age?
John Larry Nichols, July 6, 1942, which makes me about 69.
Where are we recording this interview?
Oklahoma City, in the offices of Devon Energy.
Where were you born?
Oklahoma City.
Let's talk about your mother. Your mother's name, her maiden name, where she was from.
Mary Davis was her maiden name. She was born in McAlester, Oklahoma. She turns 95 in a couple of weeks.
Can you describe her for us? What kind of personality did she have?
Oh, she still does. She's alive and well and kicking. In fact, I took her to the OU football game last week, so she is an avid fan of football. Surprisingly, she is very much a vibrant, engaging person.
Your father's name?
John Whiteman Nichols, born in Ardmore, Oklahoma. The two of them met at the University of Oklahoma when they were both students.
And how would you describe your father's overall personality?
My father was a very engaging person. He was a true salesman, a pioneer, a visionary, an entrepreneur. He truly loved business. He loved doing deals. He loved being creative. He really loved business.
So then both of them as a couple of very outgoing personalities.
Yes.
And wanting to be engaged in their community and that type of thing.
Absolutely.
Your father went to OU. Did he work his way through college?
He did. He described hitchhiking from Ardmore during the Depression to get to OU. They'd go out to the highway, not the interstate we have now, but to the state highway and hitchhike up there. Had a variety of jobs in college, as most everyone did in that era.
How was your father introduced to the oil and gas business?
My father graduated with a degree in accounting, became a CPA, and was doing accounting work for an oil and gas firm and a variety of other firms. He worked for Phillips Arnon Masco, a small accounting firm at the time, got to know the oil and gas business through the accounting era, and had the idea of going out and starting his own oil and gas business.
So a very significant thing happened. Then he created the world's first oil and gas drilling fund, registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. Talk to us about that, how he started it and how it was structured.
He was working with one of the lawyers, Ken McAfee, the father of McAfee and Taft, one of the large law firms in Oklahoma City, who realized that at the time a wealthy person could deduct intangible drilling costs, which was not widely known at the time. He had this idea of registering a program with the SEC just to have a means to describe it to investors, because investors in those days had a 90% tax rate, no alternate minimum tax. So if you could return a modest return to the investor who was going to pay 90% of that to the federal government, then it was a very economically viable enterprise. And the first letter they sent to the SEC sent back a letter that said, sorry, we don't think this is a security and you do not have to register it. But they wanted to register it so that it would lend some credibility that an outside group had looked at it and approved the structure and approved the statements that were in there. And they finally persuaded the SEC to approve it, which shows you how the world has changed. Now people would do anything not to have arms of the federal government involved in their business. And the federal government, conversely, would use, particularly in these days, would use any lever it could to have control over what you're doing.
Then he has a gathering of people who could be interested in this. He had to sell it to a group.
He had to sell it to groups. He made trips to California, met with movie stars. He made trips to Pittsburgh and New York City and met with the industrialist of the era. Basically, if they believed the tax structure worked the way they said it did, then they invested. If they didn't believe that, they probably didn't. So he had a blue chip name of investors at the time that invested.
Philip Armour was one of them?
Philip Armour, yeah. They were leaders of large corporations, founders of large corporations, as well as some of the movie stars of the day.
Any of those stars you can remember?
No, I was quite a young fellow at the time.
Yes, but then I would imagine they'd have to bring their tax people to the room and say, is this guy crazy or what's going on here?
It was all about the tax lawyers and the tax accountants looking at the structure and approving it.
We can point to that because it changed the way America's oil fields would be developed.
Oh, absolutely. As that structure became accepted in the investing community, other firms started doing that. And by the mid-1980s, people using exactly the same structure that my father pioneered were raising well over $2 billion a year in these drilling funds to fund drilling operations in the United States.
Because the way they were sheltering themselves from tax, they could return more to the investor.
Exactly.
So He and F.G. Blackwood built a large regional oil and gas company. Would that be in the 50s and 60s?
Yes. There were four partners, actually. My father provided the accounting and the financial expertise to the partnership. Blackie, as everyone called Mr. Blackwood, was the petroleum engineer. A man named Bill Hillswick in Dallas, Texas, was a geologist. And John Fisher, who was the chairman and CEO of Ball Corporation, was really the financial godfather of the group. Interestingly, they started this partnership in 1950. All four of them continued to be partners for all of their lives. They all remain married. We have added the second generation, and that partnership that was formed in 1950 is still alive and well, with members of all four of those founding partners now serving as general partners. Very rare in the United States. I think the average life of a partnership is 3.5 years, and here we've got a partnership that started in 1950. It survived with four families being partners, and we still respect and do business with each other and enjoy it very much.